The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Good morning, folks. Well, we, as I said, it's going to be an interesting day. The market's going to be a little nervous because of all the things that are going to go on in Syria. And we're really lucky this morning. We have a guest that not only we're bringing him on for another reason. We're bringing him on for the NABE report, the National Association of Business Economics, which is an association for people who use economics in their business. And we've had him on before. He's a great guest. And we like to go through the report, so we'll be going through the report. But because he is a global economist, maybe he can give us some insight on what the impact of this serious, I mean, you know, that would be difficult to say.
Oh, yes.
Syrian situation is. But anyway, we may get to that in just a little bit. But this morning we've got with us Dr. Jay Bryson, Managing Director and Global Economist at Wells Fargo. Jay provides analysis on financial markets and macroeconomic developments in the major economies of the world. He is based in Charlotte, North Carolina, and he's a member of NABE. We'll be talking this morning about the NABE Policy Survey. Good morning, Dr. Bryson.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Fine, sir. Thank you. Well, now, how often does NABE do the policy survey? You've got several different surveys during the year. I've gotten kind of a little confused because when I started reading this last night, I thought, wait a minute, this is not the normal one about housing starts and things like that. This one's a little different. How frequently is this one done?
Right. So what we do is we have three different surveys. We have an industry survey where we talk to, like, the chemical industry and the plastics industry and things like that. We have one that's called our Economic Outlook Survey, which we do a few times a year, and that's surveying economists. What do you think about GDP growth? What do you think about housing starts? What do you think about CPI?
Okay.
And then the one that we're going to talk about here today is what's called our policy survey. We do that now twice a year. We do it typically in the early spring and typically late summer, early fall. And that's when we talk about policy, generally fiscal policy and monetary policy, but there may be some regulatory questions and things of that nature.
Right. It was so interesting that we have you on because Jack Lew was on this morning. He was on CNBC this morning, and as I listened to his interview, it's very difficult for me to listen to people interview politicians because they don't ever say anything. They bring you nothing new. And I was sitting there saying, okay, I can't remember who was interviewing. I said, okay, as soon as he asked the question, I said, okay, well, I'll tell you what the answer is going to be. And sure enough, it just came out. Let's take a look at what the situation. What is the bottom line from your from those of you? You had 220 members respond. What is the bottom line? They looks to me like they're pretty happy. Are they generally happy with what's going on?
Well, I'd say they're generally happy with what's going on in terms of monetary policy. You know, roughly 60% of them, when asked, so what do you think about current monetary policy? Is it too stimulative? Is it too restrictive? Or is it just about right? 60% of them choose that kind of Goldilocks answer, kind of just about right now.
Right.
So if we were all czars and could change monetary policy, I don't think most of us would. Now, in terms of fiscal policy, the bottom line here is there's really no consensus, which really shouldn't be all that shocking. That's kind of probably pretty much what you find in the public at large. 40% thought that fiscal policy today is too restrictive. But then 30% with Goldilocks just about right, and then 20% said it's too stimulative. So there's really no consensus, you know, when it comes to fiscal policy.
There is a consensus on monetary policy. There's a lot of strength there, but fiscal policy it's pretty even across the board. You get a little bit of everything.
Right? Yeah, as a professional economist, I guess I would have almost. I mean, I wish I would have. We would have seen a stronger consensus in terms of the fiscal policy, you know, because then you could use this as, you know, maybe advice to policymakers or something. You could say, look, 80% of our members believe X, Y, Z. Unfortunately, we can't say that. So, you know, we're not coming across with a real strong policy advice there.
Why do you think? That's happening? Dr. Bryson, why is there such a balance here?
Well, I think, I don't know, this is a hypothesis here, and my hypothesis would be probably political bias may end up with some of these answers. I mean, monetary policy, I mean, I appreciate that there's some politics involved in monetary policy, but it's generally seen as kind of an apolitical thing. It's set by the Federal Reserve Board, which is generally seen as apolitical. The people who sit on the Federal Reserve Board are technical sort of people. They're not politicians. But when it comes to fiscal policy, that's obviously controlled by, you know, obviously the Congress and the White House. And it's talking about taxes and government spending, and these are all political sort of decisions. And as political professional economist, as much as you try to keep political biases out of there, sometimes they arise into your answers. And so my sense would be perhaps some of the politics end up in some of these answers as well.
Yeah, I suspect you're probably right. I guess the first one to come up, really, the first challenge is under monetary policy, which is the possible change of the stimulus coming from the Fed, the asset purchase program. What did your group feel about that? Did they look at that and say, okay, I noticed in some of the remarks here that they think that they're going to start in September. There seems to be a lot of doubt increasing now that September is going to be a drop-dead date, because it looks like, at least from numbers released late last week, particularly in housing and what we're looking at now, that the economy isn't quite as strong as people thought it would. Could this maybe push this reduction of the QE out a little bit?
That's certainly possible. You know, Mike, as you mentioned, some of the numbers have come in a little bit weaker than expected. I think that some big numbers are still coming up. Probably the most important number will be the non-farm payroll number that we get next Friday. The ISM manufacturing number that we get next week will also be very, very important to that debate as well. I think the profession, or, you know, if you at least talk to, like, Wall Street prognosticators, most of them, up until maybe recently, would have said that the Fed would start to, quote, taper or announce a tapering at the September meeting. Some other people were saying, no, it's probably more likely it's going to happen in December. The reason they picked those two dates is because there is a press conference, after both of those. There is an FOMC meeting in October, but there's not a press conference. And given it's something as important as starting to taper these purchases, most people believe that the Fed would want to have a press conference afterward to explain why. And so, you know, we'll see. It's still very, very data dependent. We still have almost a month to go before the next FOMC meeting. We have a number of data releases that are coming in, and we'll see. You know, and the world could be a completely different place a month from now.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. And so, you know, the Fed does not have to make a decision until September the 18th, and they will not make a decision until September the 18th. It's certainly nothing is written in stone at this point.
So, I mean, so if it does happen in September, it will not happen until the 18th?
That's when the FOMC meeting is. And that's when they would announce it. When they actually start to, quote, taper their purchases, I mean, that's a little bit more of an open question. You know, it could occur, you know, within the next week. Maybe they'll start doing it in October or whatever. But anyway, the FOMC meeting is on September the 18th.
Now, looking at some of the charts that I've seen recently, it doesn't seem like quantitative easing really has made that big of a difference anyway. So do you think if they do start tapering, we've got less than a minute to go before the break, that it really will be much ado about nothing?
Well, first of all, we had a question about that, and we said, our question was, do you believe that, you know, the asset purchase program has been a success? Three quarters of our members said, yes, it has been a success. So it does appear like it has had an existence.
Right.
That said, you know, it's not like long-term interest rates are going to completely back up when they stop tapering. That's already kind of factored in. So it is a little bit much about news and nothing at this point.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, listen, there's a lot more we want to talk about. If you'll just stay with us, Dr. Bryson, we'll be back on the other side of the break. Stay with us, folks. You're listening to Straight Talk Money, where we bring you the wisdom of Wall Street. Dr. Bryson, I'll be back in just a moment.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
As I said, this morning the market's going to be under pressure because of the Syrian situation, and we're fortunate enough this morning to have Dr. Jay Bryson with us. Dr. Bryson is the Managing Director and Global Economist at Wells Fargo. And this morning he's representing NABE, the National Association for Business Economics, an association for people who use economics in their business. And so we talked a little bit about monetary policy, Dr. Bryson, before the break. And so I thought I'd switch just very quickly over to fiscal policy and see what the thoughts were there, because obviously the big looming thing is the budget argument that could come up next month. We on the monetary side, you've got perhaps a change in the stimulus from the Fed, and on the fiscal side, it looks like we have an upcoming, hopefully not, but a possible argument on Capitol Hill. What are the thoughts of the NABE members on our fiscal policy?
Well, I mean, so most of them would say that the primary fiscal challenge that the country faces is not the present size of deficit. So if you look over the last 12 months, we've accumulated about $700 billion, and that's a big number, right? But remember, just a few years ago, that was $1.4 trillion. So we've cut it in about half. And so with that in mind, most of our members, essentially 90%, would say, you know, the current fiscal deficit is not our problem. But our problem, according to 80% of our members, is the deficits that are going to pile, you know, within the next 10 years, or the deficits of the 2020s and the 2030s, the long-term sort of things. So, you know, that's if there's a consensus in terms of our fiscal policy, it's don't worry about the deficits, the size of the deficits today. They're manageable. It's deficits, you know, going further out. It's kind of, you know, when the baby boomers retire and further out, that's where the problems lie.
Okay, and you're right. And that's part of the problem. I mean, I've got children, and it still seems like we're kicking the can down the road. I was listening to Jack Lew's interview this morning. He was talking about, well, you know, all we're doing is financing deficits that were created earlier, not what we're creating now. And it's like, who's he trying to kid? I mean, you know, we're creating a lot of deficits. So, and I was looking at your graphs here and some of the things in your report. It seems like you've got members. You've got only 2% of them think, I guess, one of the best ways for us to deal with is to raise revenue. How are we going to deal with these deficits?
Well, you know, there's a balance of opinion there, but I would say, well, the plurality, so, you know, this would be, you know, almost 40% would say, it's not a consensus, it's not a majority, but a plurality would say that the best way to deal with these long-term deficits, and again, I want to stress that, the long-term deficits would be through some sort of balanced approach, right? It's either, you know, on both spending restraint and revenue increases. Now, we tend to skew a little bit more towards a little bit more of the spending restraints, right? But our members aren't saying it's all or one, right? It's more of a balanced sort of thing. And, you know, what's striking to me is, so 40% of our folks, our members, are saying that. I don't know if you could get 40% of people on Capitol Hill agreeing to, you know, one of these sorts of things. So perhaps there's a little bit more consensus within our membership than there is on Capitol Hill right now.
Yeah, I would think that's probably true. All right, well, let's move on to regulatory policy, because that's a big thing for me. I was just, this past weekend, I was actually studying Obamacare, and not because of the show as much as I wanted to learn how it was going to impact me as a small businessman. Now, I know in your organization, you have all different sizes of businesses, but is there a concern that the federal health care program is going to have a meaningful impact on business in this country?
Well, to that specific point on business, we didn't really have a question on that. I mean,
okay.
We had two questions about the Affordable Health Care Act, and one would be, as you know, they recently changed the employer mandate. You know, you originally had to comply with that by January 1st, 2014, and a month ago they pushed that back to 2015. So we asked our members, So is that going to have an impact on 2014 growth rates? And 60% said, no, not, okay? But the second question that we asked then was, you know, is this going to have an effect in terms of budget deficits and things like that? And 60% of our measures said that the Affordable Care Act will raise expenditures in the federal government more than expected. So I think if there's a concern among the members, it's that as these programs are you know, is put into place and implemented, that it could cause a drag on the budget deficit, you know, as we go forward.
Okay. Now, I do know that one area you did ask questions about was apparently the illegal alien situation. And where did your members come down on that?
So one of the questions we asked was that if we, you know, if they pass some sort of comprehensive immigration reform that would include either a path to citizenship or other legal status for undocumented workers, what effect would that have on the long-term economic growth rate? 60%, more than 60%, said that a comprehensive immigration reform plan would increase the long-term economic growth rate of the United States. So, you know, I would put that down in the consensus sort of category. You know, when you talk about 60% of the membership saying that, 60% thought that, that would increase the long-term economic growth rate of the United States.
Well, I'm sure some political party is going to pick up on that because that's pretty strong. That does send a message. So overall, just kind of wrapping up your report, do you still feel like the membership is pretty positive and optimistic on the direction the country is moving and that our economy is, in fact, going to improve over the next couple years?
You know, it's hard for me to say, to argue with a straight face, you, Mike, that we feel optimistic at this point. You know, I think, you know, one of the good point is we believe we're on the right track when it comes to monetary policy. We believe we're on the right track when it comes to what the Federal Reserve is doing. But I think one of the things that, you know, shows up here is that we do believe that we have some long-term fiscal challenges here. And given the fact that there doesn't seem to be much agreement in Congress right now on how to approach these long-term fiscal challenges, you know, for me to say with a straight face we feel optimistic about the long-term nature of the U.S. economy, I think I would be pushing that.
Okay, well, that's fair enough. All right, I've only got about a minute and a half to go. I wanted to ask you about Syria and what the impact, if we go in there, might be, and what are your thoughts on the Syrian situation?
Right, so Syria is not a major oil producer at all, but whenever you talk about that part of the region and potential conflicts there, it always has an effect on oil prices. I mean, if you look at West Texas Intermediate today, it's up close to $3 a barrel. Brent crude is up close to $3 a barrel right now. You know, you have some important players over there. You know, Iran is an important ally of Syria. Iran could use its oil as a weapon. You know, there's other important states in the region that have interest there. Saudi Arabia is one of them. And then you're also dealing with a potential, you know, another big ally of Syria is Russia. And so you are talking about the potential conflict between the United States and Russia, and that, you know, that's not a good thing either. It's one thing to lob a few cruise missiles at Syria, but it's another thing entirely to have a potential conflict with a major power like Russia. And so it's obviously a very unsettled situation right now. Syria is a small country, but there's a lot of people have interest, and the people who have interest there are powerful, and they have economic weapons that they can use. And
yeah,
if the situation slows down, I think the market's going to remain volatile.
Well, we'll see. It certainly is today. Dr. Bryson, thank you so much for being with us, sir. We appreciate it very much. Thank you for appearing today.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.